But this time we hear a double rebroadcast of a Black Awareness program. Rebroadcast from Friday and also from a former date, as Dolores Costello was unable to do a program for this week. In this program, Ms. Costello talks with Ted Veal, former employee of the New York State Division of Human Rights.
I remember my first love affair. Somehow or another, the whole darn thing went wrong. But my mama had some great advice, so I thought I'd put it in the words of this song. I can still hear her saying, boy,
boy, boy,
oh, I see you sitting out there all alone, crying your eyes out, 'cause the woman that you love is gone. Oh, it's gonna be a whole lot of trouble in your life. Oh, so listen to me, get up off your knees.
Good afternoon, brothers and sisters. This is Dolores Costello bringing you Black Awareness, WBAI-FM. Today we're going to talk about the State Division of Human Rights. My guest for this afternoon is Mr. Theodore Veal. He's a former employee of the New York State Division of Human Rights. Welcome, Mr. Veal, to Black Awareness.
Thank you very much.
And now before we go into, you know, the whole thing that you're here about, first tell us, what is, one, the State Division of Human Rights? And I understand that there's a difference between the two human rights.
Well, even before I answer that question, let me just take the chance of sounding immodest or presumptuous by saying that the issue we're going to discuss today is one of the most important issues that the Black and Puerto Rican community in our state could be concerned about.
Right on.
The State Division of Human Rights came into existence some 3 years ago after a history of 25 years of laws against discrimination having been enacted in the state. The City Commission is under the state charter, each metropolitan area is allowed to set up its own commission if they have a certain amount of population, over 100,000. Now, the state is the main agency that's supposed to enforce the laws against discrimination.
Mm-hmm. Where do they get their money? I mean, how are they funded?
From the legislature. It's budgeted just as all other agencies of the state government are budgeted. They have over $3.5 million a year to enforce the human rights laws.
Mm-hmm. And now you just said that if a state has over 100,000, then they...
If a city has over 100,000 population, they are entitled under the charter to set up their own human rights commissions, which is what exists in New York City. New York City, with its tremendous population, was able to set up a commission which has concurrent jurisdiction in the city of New York of cases arising around discrimination. In other words, you can take a complaint either to the State Division of Human Rights or you can take it to the City Commission in the city of New York.
Right.
If you're outside New York City and there's no commission, you take it to the State Division automatically.
Uh-huh. Now, is it better to have a state, a city? That threw me about the 100,000, because there are some cities that don't have 100,000.
And they don't have any commissions, nor do they have a regional office of the State Division of Human Rights either.
So they have to go to the state.
They have to go to the state and travel some distance to whatever regional office that there is in the state. The state has 8 regions, and they're located in the major urban centers, Syracuse, Buffalo, et cetera, et cetera.
So in other words, if you don't have a lot of money where you can travel, you're in
trouble from the get-go.
Wow. All right, I understand also that the people that have, the cities that have 100,000 are also in trouble. That's why your group was formed, right? Because the State Division of Human Rights is not doing its job.
Oh, no question about it.
All right.
That is the big problem. The People's Committee to Abolish the Human Rights Division was formed only a few weeks ago.
Okay.
And the formation of that committee came as a result of years and years of frustration on the part of organizations concerned with the fight against discrimination and the enforcement of anti-discrimination laws in attempting to get the government to do something about enforcing the laws. Now, I gave you a fact sheet that we hurriedly prepared recently that starts in 1965 and comes up to the present time, which is the center of our own struggle. The law was set up 25 years ago, the first law, specific law against discrimination in employment. And since that time, as a result of the pressures brought by minority peoples throughout this state, additional laws have been passed. New forms have been taken in the commission. It's changed from SCAD to the Commission Against Discrimination to the Commission on Human Rights.
Mm-hmm.
And most recently, the period that we're concerned about primarily is the restructuring of this thing into a division, which is in the Executive Department of Government under the governor's leadership,
mm-hmm.
where a single commissioner, Robert Mangum in the current case, is the commissioner of the division, and he has the power to enforce the laws through the structure that he has set up.
Right. All right. This is a very important thing, and that's why I want to get as much information out as possible. Now, who is Robert Mangum, and where did he come from?
Well, Robert Mangum is a man who's been in city and state government for quite a while. He's a former police lieutenant. He was a deputy police commissioner in charge of licensing. He was in the hospitals as administrator, deputy commissioner there. He was in the Office of Economic Opportunity, and 3 years ago, Rockefeller appointed him the commissioner of the division.
Mm-hmm.
He is a black man, or a Negro, I think
Oreo
is a better
cookie.
Characterization, who has been aloof from the problems of black and Puerto Rican people and has kept his political slate clean and therefore was appointed to this job, I feel. However, he's only a figurehead,
mm-hmm.
because the main thrust of our committee to abolish the Division of Human Rights is toward Governor Rockefeller, who has the ultimate and final responsibility for enforcing the laws. But Governor Rockefeller has not seen fit to carry out the mandate that the legislature has given him in terms of strengthening the laws, in terms of the powers of the laws, etc. So that what we have is a commissioner, as is the common practice to put a black person
mm-hmm.
or a Negro in the top position,
right.
But they do nothing about changing the real power structure of the organization. That is, the policy decision still rests with the white people who have been at the agency from its inception.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the general counsel of the division is a white person who has absolutely no concept of the contemporary times we live in and whose thinking is more reminiscent of the 30s than of the 1970s.
Right, I saw that in one of the pieces of material you gave me. Now, what are some of the problems? Let's talk about some of the internal problems, you know, because you were there and you were facing them. You were along with Henry
Amador,
who was also fired.
Yes.
Right. First, explain why you were fired. I think, you know, that should be an interesting example of just what is going on in the Division of Human Rights,
yes.
State Division of Human Rights.
Well, let me start by saying that one of the reasons that Henry Amador is not here with me today to discuss this issue with you is that after we were fired from the division, he and I, we'd gone to work there on January 15th of this year.
Right.
And on March 30th, we were given 2 weeks termination notices, and on April 14th was our final day of employment.
Mm-hmm.
But Henry went to work for HEW, Health, Education, Welfare, in the Head Start program.
Right.
And as a result of the action we took, he has now been fired. He has been fired from that job
again,
in spite of the fact that He has tremendous competence, has extensive background, executive ability, etc. But he was fired solely for the reason that he had had the nerve to charge this agency with racism. Mm-hmm. And so that he's out hustling up a job, and he's got the problems of survival, so he wasn't able to get here today. But Henry and I started to work in the agency naively, thinking that we were going to be relevant, that the laws against discrimination are fairly strong. They may be imperfections, there's no question about that, but essentially it's a strong law that we have on the state books in New York State. Mm-hmm. If we had some kind of enforcement of these laws, there would be no question that the conditions of our people in the ghetto, black, Puerto Rican, and other minority people, would be far different than it is today. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that while we have these laws, the function of the agency that's supposed to enforce them is primarily to create a public relations image for Governor Rockefeller. Mm-hmm. And this state lauds itself throughout the nation as being the most advanced state in dealing with the problems of discrimination. It mm-hmm. set up this committee, commission, it set up, it enacted the laws, etc. And over the years, the laws have gotten stronger, etc., but nothing is being done. Mm-hmm. Now, Henry and I became aware immediately, once we got to work there, that we were duped into thinking that we were going to do something, because right. it only takes one day on the job to discover that there's nothing serious about the Division of Human Rights, mm-hmm. that they're not there to enforce laws against discrimination. What they are there for is what I said before, is mm-hmm. to create a public relations image for right. the governor, primarily. And in this connection, let me say that even the Commissioner Mangum himself says, he may not say it for publication, but he says it to everyone who comes to him with criticisms of the inaction and the ineffectiveness of the organization, that this division and the commissions before it have been used historically as a political dumping ground. Mm-hmm. It is where Rockefeller pays off his political chums by giving them the $20,000 and $30,000 jobs that they have, and they do nothing.
Right. Now let me ask you, now say for example, who are affected? Let's say that if the legislature's laws, if those laws that are there, imperfect as they are, but if they were enforced, who would they affect?
Well, number one, the laws were designed originally to alleviate the conditions of the oppressed people, blacks and Puerto Ricans and other minorities.
Yeah, but I mean, all right, so therefore black and Puerto Rican people would be bringing the charges against people. So in other words, I'm saying, who would these charges affect if they were really enforcing the laws?
Yes.
Who would they affect?
Well, they would affect those areas of industry and the economic life of our state who have consistently barred our participation in the mainstream of the economic mm-hmm. life of this state. Mm-hmm. For example, let's take the craft unions, the most mm-hmm. notorious example of the exclusion of minority people. Governor Rockefeller has the full support of the craft unions.
So would the hard hats come under that?
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
It is exactly where he has made this kind of pact with these unions to consistently keep blacks and Puerto Ricans out. And they have endorsed him, incidentally, in this coming election, wholeheartedly,
right.
which indicates something is fishy. But we don't need that. Adam Walensky, who is running for lieutenant governor, attorney general in the coming elections, prepared a very extensive report last year, for example, that spelled out that $8.5 million is lost in New York State because of the failure to use the people in the state to work in the construction industry. You see, the construction trades has tremendous money at their disposal. But what they do is recruit people from all over the country to come to New York and work, whereas a black or Puerto Rican who wants to get into the industry cannot get into the unions.
Well, wouldn't that
this
also
is one of the most important ways in which the absence of enforcing the law affects us.
I see. All right, now this may sound like a dumb question because this is a black program dealing with things that are relevant to black people, but that point that you brought out, that they bring people from all over other parts of the country.
Including Canada.
Okay. But wouldn't that also affect the whites, the white construction workers right here in the city?
No, the problem, you
see. It wouldn't?
The reason that they've been successful in excluding us is they have a like a grandfather clause in their constitutions,
uh-huh.
so that you can't get in the union unless you're recommended by somebody else who's in it. You know, like a brother or a cousin or somebody.
Right.
So they keep the membership small.
Uh-huh.
So it certainly does affect white workers who would want to get into the unions, except that the problem is not there, because if a white wants to get in, he can get in.
He can
There's
get
no
in,
problem. Because they always have more jobs than they have people in their membership to fill those jobs. That's why they recruit from different areas like
right.
Jersey and Connecticut
mm-hmm.
and Canada even, to bring workers in to do jobs that blacks and Puerto Ricans could very easily fill.
I see.
Jim Horton.
And that's $180 million?
Oh, no, no. $850 million a year is lost by New York State as a result
Excuse
of this.
Excuse me. When you get into those high figures, past $20, I'm in trouble. All right. Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Well, speaking of money, the $3.5 million that the New York State Division of Human Rights has budgeted for this year and previous years can be added to that, because it is also just taxpayers' money poured down the drain. Because if they're given this money to do a job of enforcing the law and they don't do that, then it's a waste of the taxpayers' money.
Right.
But worse than that, we said that when this committee was set up, the people we talked to, they didn't want to talk to us about any more reforms, because as I indicated before, the fact sheet that we showed you before indicates that from 1965, we have had consistently people coming to bring pressure on the government, on the governor, on the legislature, et cetera, to enforce the laws, you know,
right.
criticisms up and down the line. But nothing is done to change that. So they give you a snow job and give you a new commissioner, as Mangum represents
mm-hmm.
that kind of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
They give you a new title of the division.
Mm-hmm.
But the hardcore racists who have controlled the destiny of the organization remain.
Mm-hmm.
And when Henry and I were fired on the 14th, we took that opportunity to expose what we knew from the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the first time this has happened. In the past, it's been people criticizing who are outside the organization.
Right.
The civil rights organizations, human rights, fair housing groups,
mm-hmm.
even individuals
right.
like P.J. Sidney and
right.
Flo Kennedy, et cetera, who've carried on campaigns against the division. But all these organizations have been doing this consistently, and they get promises from the government, they have conferences, et cetera. So when we were fired on the 14th, we read a 9-page statement at that hearing that was being held in the Brotherhood in Action building,
right.
which denounced the agency from the inside, because we had had the inside information.
Right.
I myself, for example, had been assigned to help organize that housing hearing that they were holding that day.
Right.
And I knew from the get-go that it was a farce.
Well, that I see here, because when you're talking about that, and I read that, and I said, 1970, you know, this is still happening,
exactly.
right? When they keep telling us that things are getting better. And you said that you were put on this committee to help organize this. However, you noticed that there were no black or Puerto Rican people on this committee, and that they were also talking about housing for the people in the committee, right?
Right. Well, and for the people that are supposed to, you know, blacks and Puerto Ricans and other minorities who are excluded from the suburban areas because of the high cost of building a house in the area. Which brings us to a good point, that the emphasis of the division in creating this public relations image has always been on showcase cases. What do
right.
they do?
Mm-hmm.
The thing that you read about in the paper periodic, they talk about the voluntary fire departments, they're going to get a black guy in there.
Right.
Or they talk about a $50,000 Westchester home that they'd won for some black
right.
person, right?
Right, like all of us can move to Westchester.
Exactly,
right.
because that's the main charge, the criminal neglect of the masses of blacks and Puerto Ricans who really need to have this law enforced in their behalf. Nothing is done.
Right.
Construction trades is an example
right.
of it. Those guys make fantastic incomes, you know,
right.
and they're jobs that don't require master's degrees, et cetera, et cetera,
right.
but we're excluded from them. In the area of housing, they're dealing with $50,000 Westchester homes, but they're not dealing with the problems of the ghetto people in the rat-infested slums that we live in to do something to get through to a decent housing for poor people.
That's true.
Which is the emphasis that Henry Amador, who is very active in the community, he raised this question and wrote a three-page memo suggesting that the Vision do something on it. Of course, they didn't do anything on it. And this kind of question got us in bad.
Right.
But the thing that tipped it off was that we had some specific problems with white supervisors there.
Right.
And as a result of our having charged these supervisors with being racist in their treatment toward us, minority people, we were fired out of hand without any recourse to appeal, any...
You didn't have a hearing or anything.
They did set up a kangaroo court.
Right.
But we were never on charges, so we should never have been the ones who were brought to that kangaroo court.
Right.
The persons that we charged, though, of course, were never spoken to officially, and instead we were just handed letters 2 weeks later after they'd had this so-called hearing, and that those letters said that we regret to inform you, this is Deputy Marshal, Deputy Commissioner Marshall Peck, who did the hatchet job on us, he just handed us letters and says, these letters said, we regret to inform you your employment with the Division of Human Rights will be terminated as of the next pay period, April 14th.
Right. Then what? Then your next step was that you, I understand, you also made, you filed charges against the agency.
Well, by that time, we'd been there 3 months. We realized that we had no recourse within the division.
Right.
They had tried to intimidate us, to shut us up. Mangum himself had threatened us with reprisals if we had raised any noise about the discrimination in the division itself, and that he would follow us wherever we go. And Henry Amador's being fired from HEW is a concrete example of the way in which these people will operate to prevent any criticism of the ineffectiveness of this agency, because that's what happened. He was fired from his second job because he had raised these questions, but they were not able to intimidate us.
All right, let me say this. If, he's a commissioner? Commissioner Mangum?
Commissioner Mangum.
All right. If Commissioner Mangum wants to have equal time to answer this, he can. I'm saying it now. You know, if he wants to come on and tell his side of the story, feel free to call me, Dolores Costello, WBAI. All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I would like to join in welcoming such a answer, because the thing that we are eagerly awaiting is the attempt on their part to answer the charges that we've made against the division.
Right.
As you know, on the 14th, we took over that hearing and denounced the agency, etc. And as a result, all the civil rights groups who were going to participate in that hearing walked out in support of us.
You understand there's about 300 and some odd people?
Well, not quite that many.
So you can't believe what you read.
Okay. But the hall was jammed. And, of course, the meeting was in chaos after our speech. And they walked out caucus, held a press conference, and said that they would no longer participate in this division's hearings until it had clean hands of the charges raised by us.
Right.
Well, that was certainly more than we had expected.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, these groups decided to form a committee because of the criticisms over the years.
Right. Now, you said you've only been together for a few weeks, yet I see you've got at least about 20 or some odd organizations. How were you able to get that many organizations within that length of time?
Well, that's a very interesting question, because it does seem unusual, to say the least.
That's
such a short time as this, we've been able to amass over 40 organizations, in fact, and we don't have them all on this list because we haven't had time to. But that is an indication of the kind of criticisms and frustration that these organizations have had with the division over the years.
Right.
We did not have to convince them of anything on the 14th when we took over that meeting. All we had to do was let them know that there was some criticism being channeled and organized now, and everybody we speak to come in automatically.
Okay. Now, tell us now, what are some of the aims? Now, the organization is the People's Committee to Abolish the State Division of Human Rights. Now, what are some of the aims of the committee to abolish?
Well, the fundamental aim is to end institutional racism in New York State. The method by which this is to be achieved is not altogether worked out. After all, we're only in action now for a few weeks. And one of the things that we have emphasized consistently is that the people have to become involved in determining how the laws are to be enforced.
Right.
So that even though our committee is very extensive by this time, pardon me, it still does not represent the full participation on a statewide basis of the people and the community organizations. So we do not have final answers, but we do tell you, we can tell you the direction in which we're going. Number one, that this division or the enforcement of human rights laws has to be taken out of political hands. It has to be taken away from the governor because he has demonstrated over and over again his irresponsibility in the area of race relations and anti-discrimination enforcement. That's number one. The second thing is that some new form has to be devised. Now, we have simultaneously, when we established the organization, set up a large legal committee. And that committee is composed of people who have fought the division over the years to try to get them to move, individual practicing, private practicing attorneys, as well as organizations like the NAACP, the Urban League, Harlem Fight Back, Metropolitan Council on Housing. And let me say at this point that all of these organizations in the main have boycotted the division now for some time precisely because they have not done anything. Take an organization like Operation Open City, which is part of the Urban League. Their job is to get blacks and Puerto Ricans into decent housing to break down discrimination. Well, so ineffective the division has been that for three years now, Open City has not filed a single case with the Division of Human Rights, but instead has used the City Commission. Harlem Fight Back, which is the main organization that's fought to get blacks into the Construction Trades Union under Jim Horton, has boycotted for 2 years because of their frustration. 2 years ago, they brought monumental evidence, documented, to Mangum, to the division, and said, look, this is the problems. Walensky developed this whole report on the exclusion of blacks and Puerto Ricans. But the division has yet to move one finger to get a black or a Puerto Rican a job in the construction trades industry, in spite of the evidence. So that these organizations that we have supporting us, they already have had their experience.
Right. All right, time has run out, but there were something else that was very important, I think people should understand. You mentioned about the personnel, the percentage of blacks and Puerto Ricans that are involved in the State Division of Human Rights. You know, could you give us a brief rundown on just how many blacks and how many Puerto Rican people are in executive positions? I'm sure they've got a lot of clerks and typists, and that's not taken away from clerks and typists, but we have people that are qualified also to be in executive positions.
Well, that is one of the things that we pointed out at that hearing, that here's an organization that's supposed to be helping to integrate, to bring blacks into jobs, et cetera. But we said in that statement that the most dramatic expression of the bigotry existing in the agency is its failure to include blacks and Puerto Ricans in jobs of policymaking of a professional level. There are only 5 Puerto Ricans, for example, and over 300 employees in professional positions, which is criminal. There's only 1 black hearing examiner. There's only 1 black lawyer in the division. They have blacks and Puerto Ricans in some jobs, but they're not in the policymaking positions.
Right.
Now, what we're doing is we're having a demonstration in front of Rocky's office on the 27th of May at 4 p.m. to announce to the governor and to all the people of the state that the time has come. 25 years is long enough to have pussyfooted and failed to move in these turbulent times that we're living in with all the racial strife going on, social eruptions to take place, et cetera, that it's time that we do something to enforce. So we're having this demonstration. We ask everybody to come and participate with us as a kickoff campaign for us to go statewide to guarantee that the laws on the books are enforced or that they stand exposed, that the system stands exposed for not doing its job.
Right. Now mention where the demonstration is again and what time, and where people can also contact you if they want further information.
Yeah, well, the demonstration is at 22 West 55th Street. That's Governor Rockefeller's New York City office.
Right.
It is taking place at 4 p.m. for 1 hour on the 27th, that's next Wednesday. And for further information or for contacting committee, which we would like everyone to join and participate, the People's Committee to Abolish the Human Rights Division. Its address is 254 West 72nd Street. And if you want to call, you can call 831-6561 for information and additional material to help document the charges that we're making.
All right. And anyone else that's having any other problems with the state's Division of Human Rights? I've heard about the State Division of Human Rights, but I've heard more about the City Commission of Human Rights, because that's where a lot of people are having a lot of problems. So I want to thank you, Mr. Veal, for coming down and for informing us of what's happening, why it's happening, and I hope you have, from this program, I hope a lot of people come down.
Thank you very much, and we hope to see a lot of you out there on that picket line.
Okay. Now, here are some of the things that are happening in the black community, and I'm starting now, since I will be on every Friday at 11 p.m., I'm starting what is called a Black Awareness Bulletin. So if anyone has any information about things that are going on in the community, in the black community, in Spanish-speaking community, and you want them on, please send them to me, Dolores Costello, WBAI, Black Awareness, and I will announce them.